Game On.
Game On.
2FM.
You're listening to the Game On podcast. You can join us nightly on 2FM, Monday to Friday from 7.
Game On. Gaelic football.
So plenty to get stuck into as we do each Monday. Let's chat to Pat Spillane. Pat, how are you?
I'm very well, Damien.
Quick question to ask you, a question that's been asked around our office today. How good a football championship has it been so far?
Damien, it's far too early days yet. The bottom line now is the football championship probably kicks off at provincial final stage, but really the provincial championship really gets into overdrive and gets into top standard All Ireland quarter final weekend, the bank holiday. That's exactly it. So at the moment, nothing really to stand out. No outs. We had, to be quite honest, I suppose the most enjoyable game came from two counties you wouldn't have expected to provide a good game, and that was Antrim and Fermanagh last Sunday, who gave us a high-scoring Ulster Championship football. Might have been high quality, but it was really enjoyable. 5-21 score from play. The rest of the games, Ulster has been tight and dour, and they've been games of attrition between Tyrone and Down and Donegal and Derry. Leinster, as expected. Look, the bottom line, Leinster is probably now the least competitive of the provinces, in the sense that Dublin are just miles ahead of the rest. Munster hasn't really started yet, albeit right Clare and Waterford got going the last day, but it hasn't, and Limerick and Tipperary, but it hasn't really started. And Connacht gave us almost a shock, but for 35 minutes it gave us an absolute turkey of a game, the first half between Mayo and Roscommon. So early days, we haven't had anything really to talk about, but we never do it this time of the year. It's like the opening rounds of the World Cup or the Champions League. It's a bit of shadow boxing, and the big guns haven't really displayed their wares yet.
So what we're crying out for is Laois to beat Dublin or Roscommon to beat Mayo or something like that, to inject something different into it at this stage of the year.
Well, you're right, yeah, because, we like shocks. We like to see the underdog win. We like to see David slaying Goliath. And it's good for sport, and it does buck up interest because, to be quite honest, the Leinster Championship, like I said earlier, is almost certainly a foregone conclusion because Dublin are miles ahead of the rest. And now for the first half yesterday, I will give credit to Laois. They came to play football against the Dubs. They didn't go to park the bus. They took the Dubs on, and they broke even midfield. Dublin lost their star forward Bernard Brogan to injury. They sort of they had twigged Stephen Cluxton's kick out, and they were leading by 2 points at half time. But the bottom line is, this was a game that even after 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 25 minutes at halftime, you never saw Dublin. Dublin weren't going to lose this game. Dublin, when they bring their A game to the table, when they play with high tempo, no team in the country can touch them. Dublin in the first half yesterday were just a team going through the motions. And when Dublin go through the motions and when they play with less intensity and less tempo, they can be quite ordinary. And they weren't tackling hard. They were casual with their kick passing. Their turnovers rate was high. So in the second half, they upped their tempo, they upped the intensity. And like I said in television yesterday, it wasn't the case that they hit top gear. I think they merely moved from second to third gear. They brought on the subs. The subs kicked 9 points. And when Dublin move with this pace and intensity, I love their style of football, Damien. I just love their style of football. I love their footballing philosophy. And just to sit back and admire the movement on and off the ball, the variety in their play, the support play, the angles of running, absolutely top class. And they play a positive attacking football. But credit to Laois, their heads never dropped. They played football and they had arguably the two best players in the field. Ross Munley was absolutely superb. Some of his pine kicking was magnificent. And their goalie, Graham Brodie, was superb.
Okay, we'll chat to Barry Cahill in just a moment. Before we do that, let's get some reaction from within the Dublin camp to that 2-21-16 point win at Croke Park. Here's Jim Gavin.
Anytime Dublin play against Laois, Dublin are just happy to win. So to that end, we're very happy. We were well aware that this game was going to go deep into the second half, and I'd agree that the final score didn't really reflect how close the game really was.
And it'll be more talking down the expectation, I think, of the fans here in Dublin.
Well, that expectation always exists in Dublin. When I played back in the 90s, and we've won two in the last 20 years, so That exists, and the our support base is fantastic, and we're very appreciative. They're very, very demanding, and they always expect the guys to win, but they're quite comfortable with that, and they've gone up with the players have gone up with that as well. So we're just very honoured and privileged to represent our county, and we'll do the best we can be.
Siobhan Madigan asking the questions. Let's chat to Barry Cahill. Barry, how are you?
Good, thanks, Damien. Yourself?
Not too bad. From a Dublin perspective, is that almost the ideal game for Jim Gavin, given a bit of a rattle early on by Laois and any refocusing the mind that has to go on? He now has a mechanism or a tool to do it with.
Yeah, it was good from that point of view. I suppose they had three clear-cut goal chances in the first half, and if they got one or even two of them, the game probably would have been over at half-time. But and I've been at the game there yesterday. I don't think any those were too worried at halftime, even though they were down a couple of points. There seemed to be a bit of inevitability about it, that you felt that Dublin had another couple of gears on them, and that if they did open it up for maybe 15, 20 minutes, it'd be more than enough to get over the line, and that's how it proved.
Pat, overall, if you look at it from a tactical perspective, how do you hurt Dublin, or how can a team potentially get at Dublin this year?
You know, the way Laois set up yesterday, it worked to a certain extent. Like I said, Cluxton wasn't finding a Dublin fella with every kick out. He had a few difficulties at times. Laois were effective in using Conor Meredith as a sweeper. The problem I see with a sweeper, however, and this is a major problem. The major problem I see with a sweeper is that means that when you bring a guy back, a forward back into defence and cover in front of the Dublin full forward line, that means there's a Dublin defender free. And when you give a Dublin defender a handy ball, that's an extra man. They can create the overlap, and with their pace and support play and running off the shoulder, they can't be stopped. I really think you can mark them man to man. Okay, you can say blanket defence. Blanket defence is easier said than done. It's not just a magic formula of throwing 13 bodies back, and particularly in Croke Park with such a big pitch. And I would still think some form of forwards going. You need to close off the spaces. Two things you can't have. You must mark the man to man. You cannot allow a free man. That's number one. Number two, you can't allow space. So by that, you need to funnel players back. If the player, say, is going down the right wing, well, the players on the other side of the field must funnel back to close off the space. Look, it's easier said than done. I'd love to think there's a magic formula, but, you know, Dublin, when you see a subs bench that came on yesterday that can score 9 points, you know, they're relentless. They come at you. And just when you think you're getting the best of them, they can bring on pacier forwards, pacier players. They can bring on forwards who score 3 or 4 points. So man-to-man and closing down the space, easier said than done, because like I said, you know, the bookies have them at even money. The second favourites were Mayo at 5-1, and after yesterday's episode, Mayo are going to drift out a bit. Look, Dublin, when they bring their A game to the table, they're the best team in the country. Yes, they didn't even need to bring the A game to the table. And, you know, this is the key. It reminds me a lot of Kerry in the 70s and 80s. Kerry in the 70s and 80s, you had one big match against Cork. Perhaps if you were playing Connacht or Ulster, they weren't great at the time. So you really had to peak for two matches. Jim Gavin knows in his heart and soul, he doesn't have to peak for Leinster. He needs to start peaking for three matches, the quarter-final, semi-final and final. That's very easy for a manager to do. I mean, you take the case of Mickey Hart. For Tyrone to reach the All-Ireland final and win the title, they have six matches, six big matches in Ulster, six All-Irelands. That means they have to peak for six of them. So you can understand it's easy for Jim Gavin, because he doesn't have to work them hard to train at the moment. He doesn't need them to peak until August, bank holiday weekend.
And Barry, on that, it's almost a carbon copy of the situation that Bernard Brogan found himself in last year, that he was being slated and being criticised so heavily over the course of the early stages of the championship, but yet he peaked for the semi-final and won the final for Dublin. And maybe that was evident yesterday, that he goes down injured 24 minutes. If that was 2-3 years ago, there'd be no vein has been done for his hamstring at this stage. But the depth is there, that there's no sense of panic.
Yeah, when Bernard pulled up, it looked quite bad. But I was watching him for a couple of minutes. He did go and try 3 or 4 sprints at a time just to see what it was like. And he seemed to be moving okay. But obviously, Jim Gavin felt he'd go to caution route and take him off. I mean, if it was an All-Ireland semi-final against Kerry or an All-Ireland final, he might have possibly stayed on the pitch. But I mean, obviously Dublin were pretty comfortable with having someone like Kevin McManaman coming on. You know, he played very well coming on as well. A lot of people feel that, you know, he should be starting. So I don't think Bernard's injury is too serious, and he might make it back for the Wexford game. But, you know, they probably don't need him against Wexford anyway. And, you know, they can sort of wrap him in cotton wool for the next maybe 3 to 5 weeks and try and get him back then for the Leinster final. It's just the strength and depth that they have there at the moment is ridiculous. And, you know, as Pat said, you know, they really, August Bank Holiday weekend, it will probably be their first real test. Now they could come up against, you know, a Kerry or maybe a Donegal who could have lost the provincial final, so it would still be a tough game. But you know, it's definitely a good position for Jim Galvin and the management team to be in at the moment.
Well, Barry, then from a Dublin perspective, and you know, being able to observe the squad from closer quarters than myself or Pat, is there anything that you have concerns around that might be Dublin's undoing this year, or is there a team that you've seen that you would fear, you know, could burst this bubble that everyone else is inflating?
Well, obviously Dublin are out on a level on their own at the moment. I mean, in the tier below them, you'd probably have Mayo and Cork, and then below that again, you'd have the likes of maybe Kerry, Tyrone, and Donegal. Now, it was at the National League semi-final and final, and they did give up 3 or 4 goal chances in both those games. And I think, you know, they are sometimes a bit porous there at the back because they play this expansive, you know, attacking game plan. And I think for any team to beat them, you're going to have to be extremely clinical with your goal chances. And even if Dublin concede a couple of half goal chances and teams decide to fist points, I think you actually have to go for the juggler and you know, turn down the opportunity to go for a point and actually go all out for the goals. A couple of other things that Pat has mentioned that you have to do would be to shut down Stephen Cluxton's kickouts. I'd actually just give Stephen Cluxton the option to give the kick out to the corner back and sort of defend from the sort of 65 backwards. And the other thing that possibly teams could do was, they mightn't actually start with their best team. The likes of Cork, potentially, if they met them in an Ireland quarter-final or semi-final, if they started with a couple of marquee forwards on the bench and made sure that they were still in the game with 45, 50 minutes, that they were able to bring on a couple of really good players, maybe Colm O'Neill, someone like that, just to change the dynamic of the game and do something different. It could be an opportunity to maybe catch Dublin that way.
Barry, good to talk to you as always. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, cheers, Dad.
Barry Cahill joining us there. We'll move on and chat about the other game in Leinster, the other game in Croke Park yesterday. Kildare 122-17 winners over Louth afterwards. This is the post-match reaction of their manager, Jason Ryan.
A really good first quarter, and that made a big difference. And this first quarter gave us the platform to really build on. And our defence really deserve a lot of credit today, because even when Louth came at us and pressured different stages in the first and the second half, they stood up very, very well. That Louth maybe got shots off, but between Mark Donnellan in goal and our defenders, they put so much pressure on it. There was a lot of ball kicked wide, so very pleasing from that point of view. It's great to create those chances, and we're thankful that a few of the goal chances we created, maybe we didn't get a goal, but we managed to get a point out of those, so I suppose it's not an attack totally wasted. It was just good movement in our forwards and some good ball played in, especially in the first half.
Pat, how impressed were you with Kildare?
122, 119 from play. The game was over as a contest at an early stage. What Kildare have is they have youth, they have pace, they have skill, and they have some damn good forwards, really good forwards. Fogarty, Brophy, McNally, Kelly, really good forwards. Now, let's be realistic at the same time. Despite the fact that Louth did have an opening round victory over Westmeath, this is a Louth team that were relegated from Division 2 to Division 3. They're not in the top 15, possibly 20 teams in the country. So let's have a reality check. But in fairness, Kildare had a very disappointing league. In the wide open space of Croke Park yesterday, they played beautiful football. But a serious judgment? No, have to wait for until they meet a serious team.
It's interesting, like reading some of the reaction and some of the match reports. So much emphasis has been placed on the fact that it was the younger guns that stood up and the younger guns drove them to that victory. But when you're investing all your faith in youth, you're kind of risking how they'll react when they come up against a far more formidable challenge. Could they crumble under pressure?
I can't understand the reluctance of so many county managers who are not prepared to put their faith in youth. You look at Jim Gavin, who had no problem putting Kieran Kilkenny in last year, no problem putting Jack McCaffrey in last year, no problem putting in Cormac Costello, all guys well under 21 and starring in the thing. Do you know, when I made my debut with Kerry, I was just 19 years of age, and there was a lot of other fellas around, Ogie Morden and those guys, Paddy Shea, all around the same age. I think sometimes we're just reluctant to give youth a sling. And I saw that with Roscommon yesterday. And you just think of the brilliant Roscommon under 21 team. Okay, they had a poor final, but they got to the All Ireland under 21 final. They had some brilliant forwards, and they didn't use any one of those under 21s yesterday until young Murta was introduced with a few minutes ago, and he kicked two superb points. So I just think that managers must be prepared to speculate a bit more, to gamble a bit more. If he's good, he's good. Whether he's 18 or 25, an 18-year-old or 90-year-old has the maturity. If he has the skill level, he also has the maturity, and he can deliver at senior level. It's very unusual. Actually, Kerry this year, it's the first ever time in my living memory I can't recall a Kerry panel without an under 21 player, which is strange.
Mm. But on that, I was thinking while you were talking, has the gulf between minor to 21 to senior, has it lessened over the years? Is it easier to make that transition now than it might have been years back?
Well, there's a danger that you equate success at minor and success at under 21 with senior level. It doesn't follow that. I mean, if we use that equation at under 21 level.
In terms of the physical adjustment, the skill level, the demands of senior football, has minor and 21 progressed to the level?
No, because I'll tell you why now. Because the key attributes at senior football level are the same as the key attributes at minor under 21. It's now all about skill, but more importantly, it's about pace. The senior game is about pace. It's not about strength, it's not about physicality. So if it's about pace and it's about skill, well then the young fella, whether he's an 18-year-old or a 21-year-old, it can be just as comfortable at senior level as he is at minor or under 21 level. The gap is not that large.
Just to put Leinster to bed then, the game on Saturday, Wexford 115, Longford 113. Possibly the biggest lesson Longford will have learnt is their ability or their inability to seal out a game, and they really should have got themselves over the line.
They probably should got in the lead with a couple of minutes to go, but you know, like, why did Wexford win? Forwards win games. Wexford are a pale shadow of the Wexford team that went to All Ireland semi-final, went to Leinster finals, almost won Leinster, but at the same time they have two class forwards. They have in Ben Brosnan, but in particular Kieran Ling. Two quality forwards, and throw in PJ Banville as well. When you throw in three of those into the equation, you can see why Wexford win. Mm. And they'll give Kildare a reasonably good run at it the next day.
Okay. We'll move to Connacht. Mayo 13 points to 1.
Dublin they're playing, by the way, sorry.
Sorry. Yeah, spot on. I was too keen to move on to Connacht. I missed that. Mayo Roscommon, Mayo 13 points to 1-9 winners. They'll now face either Sligo or Galway in the Connacht final. Let's get some reaction. Here's Seamus O'Shea's post-match thoughts.
Yeah, we're delighted to get a win there. This is a tough place to come, to get over here with a point is a great win. We were down here a couple of years ago in 2011, and it was the same story. We knew it would be difficult. Just as long as we got over here and moving on to Connacht final, we're delighted with that.
At any stage, did you feel this is going to slip away from us?
Hard to know. They got the goal early enough, so we had plenty of time to recover. If it was a bit later, it might have been more difficult. But they got the goal early, and it gave us time to kind of batten down the hatches a bit. We drew level a few minutes later. But it was very tough. To come out of here with a point is a good result.
I should remind you, 51552 is our text number, or 80889 from Northern Ireland. We'll come to some of those texts in just a minute. Again, Pat, we're in that situation. Roscommon must be looking back at the video thinking, how in the name of Lord did we not get over the line? But Mayo's experience, the calm heads at the end really paid off.
Well, I can tell you one simple reason why they didn't get over the line. They came with a plan, and a very defensive plan, and a plan to stop Mayo from playing. They played a blanket defence. And they really, really curtailed the Mayo attack. And it was very, very effective. But the bottom line is, they had no other plan. They hadn't an attacking plan. And I just felt that yesterday was a day that Mayo were below par. Yesterday was a day Mayo were there for the taking. And Roscommon just didn't have weren't able to adjust and go for the juggler when they had the opportunity. Twice they were 3 points ahead, and instead of driving forward and getting another couple of scores, they went into defensive mode again and they retreated back. Mayo were poor yesterday. They were very poor yesterday. Again, the same problems. There's a problem up front and forward line. Mayo management will say, this is a load of rubbish. Statistics prove we're the highest scorers in the league. There are lies, damn lies and statistics. Look, yesterday, Mayo starting six forwards got 3 points from play. Four of their starting six forwards were replaced. They struggled to get through the Roscommon blanket defence, which isn't anything, which is only a pale shadow of something that the likes of Donegal or even Tyrone would throw up. What they did show yesterday, their full back line was superb, Kniff, Cafferkey and in particular Keith Higgins. But they showed, if there's anything that positive to take out, they showed great character. Because, Damien, twice they came from 3 points behind. That was number one. Killian O'Connor showed tremendous character in scoring a vital free from the sideline, a difficult free. Andy Morden showed great character and composure in kicking his 2 points when he came on. And bear in mind that Mayo kicked the last five scores of the game. They won a game playing badly, which is good. Now, you could fool yourself and say, well, when we play good, we'll be dynamite. But I just think... they're still second or third favourites, but yesterday was a poor performance from Mayo. I thought it was a very, very poor performance. I expected a bit more.
But more than maybe any other country or any other county in the country that are considered to be within the shake-up for the All-Ireland, are they the one whose provincial championship fails to give them any indication of where they're really at?
Possibly. The average... they won. That was their 10th successive Connacht Championship victory yesterday. Actually, the same as Dublin achieved their 10th successive Championship victory. The average winning margin, exclude New York, the average winning margin for Mayo in those Connacht Championship matches has been 10 points. So they haven't been getting great competition. On their day, so I wouldn't still rule them out. On their day, they're a danger. If they're playing Dublin and Dublin aren't bringing their A game to the table, then they could catch Dublin. But it would have to be Dublin below par and Mayo, everything going right for Mayo. And they are capable of one of those big games. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, you look through the records of all the All-Ireland winners, Donegal, Kerry's, the Corks, the Dublins, they all had marquee forwards, two or three class forwards. Dublin, I said yesterday, Dublin probably have four of Dublin's starting six forwards are in the top 10 forwards in Ireland at the moment, in Connolly, in Brogan, in Flynn, and in O'Nogara. Mayo don't have any.
But on that then, and the stat gets rolled out time and time again that they've beaten the defending champions the last 3 years in a row, and this suggestion that if they can improve 10% in each position across the field that they'll be there and thereabouts to pip one of the leading counties. I don't get the impression that you fully subscribe to that argument.
Well, they haven't, because they haven't improved. They haven't introduced any new young talent. They haven't discovered any new young talent. That's number one. Number two, their forward line is still a problem area. That's number two. And they haven't kicked on. They haven't moved on to the next level. What was disappointing about yesterday was the physicality and the tackling and the work rate of last year wasn't in evidence yesterday, which was surprising now, which was very, very surprising. So I just don't think they've moved on. I don't think they've kicked on. You can throw out statistics about how great their attack was in the league. You can also throw out a statistic that they had the worst defensive record in Division 1 as well. So there are lies, like I said, lies, damn lies and statistics. I just don't think they have improved. I just don't think they've moved that level. And like I said, you need two or three class forwards and okay, they haven't got it.
The Munster Championship game, Clare and Waterford, no disrespect to any of the counties involved, but I find it very hard to get any way excited about the Munster Championship this year when you consider that Cork and Kerry have been split. What should I take out of the draw between Clare and Waterford?
A reasonably good game of football. At the same, whichever team wins will still be, unfortunately, whichever team wins in Dungarvan next Saturday will probably still be beaten by, albeit an understrength Kerry team the following week, by 8 or 9, 10 points at least. That's the sad reality. The gap between the four counties in Munster and the top two, Kerry and Cork, is an enormous gap. And while it's very important for poor teams to play better teams to improve standards, when the gulf is too big, there's nothing to be gained. Unfortunately, at the moment, the gulf is large.
OK. It leaves us the Ulster Championship semi-final between Armagh and Cavan. Armagh won 12-9 points winners. They'll now face either Tyrone or Monaghan in the final, but the game largely overshadowed by the scenes beforehand. Here's the reaction of the Armagh manager, Paul Grimley.
I think that the incident before the match is probably blew out all proportion, you know. We'll probably see this week, you know, a bit of push and shoving, that's all it was.
I think it was a bit more than that, Paul, would you not agree?
No, I wouldn't, no, because I was up beside it, you know, and I think it was a bit of push and shoving, and I think a few fellas got their jersey torn and that. So, but the thing about it is, like, you know, I'm sure there'll be plenty of coverage on that, you know, so be it. Like, you know, it'll be up to the people in power to take care of that.
Pat, the scuffle beforehand, the skirmish, call it what you want, handbags, overblown or deserving criticism of the two sets of players?
Well, if an Armagh player got a cut over the eye and Cavan's star player was forced to miss the game with a broken arm, and I saw also in the coverage a spectator trying to drew a punch at one of the Cavan players, that wasn't pushing and shoving, and that wasn't handbags. So there's no doubt about it. It was not my imagination. So the bottom line is, we don't want a general ban of, say, and a fine being handed out to Cavan and Armagh of 2,000 each and no one else. Guys need to be punished. Somebody obviously was responsible for possibly breaking Martin Dunne's head. Somebody did cut the Armagh player's eye. So let's hand out serious punishment. Do you know, I can't understand, you know, this thing about, seemingly it was an argument about which flag, which team should have been standing behind. Now, I accept that people in Ulster have a thing about symbolism and flags and whatever.
Steady on now.
And I accept their right for that. But, you know, I can't understand in championship football, and this is my, as somebody who played championship football for 10 or 12 years, when you went on that field of play, Damien, you're focused. You're in the zone. And if you were standing behind the band in a parade, you wouldn't have noticed whether the flag was your grandmother's knickers. You know, you were in the zone. You were focused. How a team could get their knickers in a twist, for want of a better word, because one crowd were standing behind the wrong. I don't know. I worry about it in the sense that I'm just wondering, not blaming any county, but, you know, psychological warfare. Was some team trying to gain an edge over the other? I don't know. But the scenes, Damien, were unacceptable.
OK, Pat, I'm a mile over on time. Good to talk to you as always. We'll chat again next week.
Game on.
Game on.
2FM.
Chat hurling in a couple of minutes' time. A couple of texts in on the football. Frank and Carlo. Leash showed yesterday that Dublin's midfield is very ordinary when Cluxton is forced to kick the ball out long. Leash may have shown a better team how to take Dublin on. I think Pat would largely agree with that. A couple of texts in. Mayo looking very ordinary yesterday, but then Roscommon were quite surprising. Mayo will hardly make the final as they did last year. A Cork-Dublin final, perhaps, from Keane Farrelly. John in Limerick echoes that. Cork will saffen Pat's bull, you know what, when it comes to September. We're going to chat hurling next. Delighted to say Dermot O'Sullivan, 3 times All-Ireland champion, joins us. Dermot, how are you doing?
Good, Damien. How are you?
Not a bother. Good to talk to you. Long time no speak. It's good to talk to you again. First matter that the most texts and most tweets are coming in on is the whole issue around the penalty and the 21-yard freeze and everything else. And I don't know if you've seen the pictures on Twitter today of Stephen O'Keefe's leg after trying to block the Nash penalty. Is it important for the GAA to come out and do something about what we saw yesterday?
Well, Damien, I think first of all, they need to clarify it. I think this issue has dragged on. It's dragged on quite a while now, for quite some time. And coming into another championship season, you would think they'd have it put to bed at this stage, because it's going to cause controversy in every hurling game all over the county. You know, even if it's a case of a guy taking a 65 or a free from 40 metres the minute he touches the ball, can you run at him? So, look, I think they're going to have to clear it up. Stephen O'Keefe was a very, very brave boy in what he did, because I think there was a survey done recently and then Anthony Nash hit the ball at 149 miles an hour, something like that. So he was a brave man to stand in front of it.
I'd imagine you got a few of them yourself over the years.
Oh, you would. You'd have got one or two, but normally we were giving them out rather than taking them.
But I know, like, people are joking about it to an element today, but, like, it is dangerous. You know, we can't ignore, people talk about player safety being paramount in all these things, and we hope we're not going to get to a situation where you or I or fellas like us are talking on radio stations about someone getting a very serious injury.
Well, you know, it's up for debate. You know, no, little did we think going out in a football championship match in Ulster yesterday, there'd be handbags, as Pat liked to call it, nearly before the game. So, look, I suppose one kind of contradicts the other. You know, we can't control what happens on the field once the game starts, i.e. a penalty or a 21-yard free. So myself or yourself aren't going to be able to fix it. I think it's up to the GA themselves to clarify this rule ASAP, as you said before, someone will get hurt.
Okay, we'll wait and see how that pans out. Anyway, to talk about hurling matters, Cork, comfortable winners over Waterford. There was almost a sense, I wasn't at the match, but people even talking about in the warm-up, you could see the dynamic, the approach from a Cork perspective was completely different. And Waterford, in some people's minds, didn't really stand a chance because there was a ruthlessness about Cork yesterday.
Yeah, I think it was a tale of two tapes. You know, a fortnight previous, Waterford and Cork, it was nearly role reversal. Waterford were on the field, they were bouncing, whereas, you know, yes, they looked dead, they looked lethargic, whereas Cork were the team, they were on their toes, they were bouncing, and, you know, they had a lot of questions answered because Jimmy had shown a few of these guys loyalty yet again, whereas there was question marks over a few, should he, and, you know, they had to perform, basically, because it was last chance saloon for some of them.
Is there a question over whether or not they took Waterford for granted the first week?
Possibly so, and you know you could every warm up of every game, you know, you can pick how you can actually see how a team is going to perform nearly by their attitude in the warm up. It's been well documented the team who goes through the warm up at top pace, you know, who can get up through their gears 1 to 5 before the start of the match. And Cork hadn't probably reached gear 3 by the end of their warm up, so maybe they did underestimate Waterford. Boy, Waterford came with, you know, a lot of young hurlers with a lot of bravery, but. You know, they had their chance the first day and they didn't take it.
Overall, from a Cork perspective, or maybe from a Clare perspective, you look at the semi-final now rolling around the corner. Is it a significant advantage to Cork that they've got these games under their belt now opposed to the All-Ireland champions coming out cold?
Yeah, they're coming out cold, but, you know, I spoke at length with Davey the day of the drawing game, the Cork-Waterford drawing game, and, you know, what was interesting to hear was that day they played a game or they had trained previously, and at that stage, you know, he knew he's starting 15, barring a serious lack of form or injury, and he probably knew the 5 or 6 guys which were going to come on, which was very, very interesting. You know, so I think they're going to have their homework done. Davey's going to be quite pleased with the amount. Listening to him that day, he is quite pleased with the amount of work they've done, and you know. I think we'll see that on Sunday.
Okay, we'll move on. The Leinster quarterfinal Saturday evening, Kilkenny 5:32-118 winners over Offaly. It still looks like a typo on my page when I look at it that way. Let's hear from the Kilkenny manager Brian Cody chatting to Brian Carthy.
Yeah, no, we played well. We created some good scoring opportunities, particularly in the first half. And you know, we got on a good run and we had a very healthy lead at half time.
What were you looking for in the second half then?
Well, it's a question, I think, about the players looking for themselves, really, because, I mean, personal pride in how you play obviously comes into it. A realisation that you're serious fighting for places, and there's players on the bench who are not starting, who are going to be, you know, fighting to it and nail over the next couple of weeks to get back into the team or to get on the team. So that's what motivates players.
Finally, you'll be facing up to Galway.
Yeah, a huge battle, obviously. There's great matches over the past number of years between ourselves and Galway. They had a very, very serious battle against Laois there last week, and, you know, they showed great tenacity in a game that was going away for them, really, to come out and win it. So we are absolutely conscious it's going to be a very, very difficult game for us.
Realistically, Dermot, what can Brian Cody have taken from Saturday's encounter?
I don't think he can take a whole pile, Damien, but I think there's two things the rest of us in the hurling fraternity can take. The ruthless streak is still in Kilkenny, which we hope maybe have died away at this stage, but when they get a chance to put you to the sword, they'll put you to the sword. But, you know, the worrying factor of all of this is the demise of Offaly, which is very disappointing to see from a hurling perspective.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I was half following it on radio and half watching it, and, you know, you're looking at the score on Twitter, and I was thinking to myself, this cannot be the gulf between the sides this early in it. And I kept coming back to feeling really sorry for Brian Whelan, who did so much for Offaly hurling, and to have to be the man to try and lead them back from what they suffered on Saturday evening, it's no easy task.
No easy task, but I think as a county as a whole, you know, I'm not too well up in Offaly matters, but we'd all have a fair idea. I think they need to hit the reset button. They need to start from scratch again. Brian Whelan, you know, Simon Whelan, there's been great guys down through the years have given a hell of a lot to Offaly hurling, and to see the way that's, you know, maybe let go and suffer, for want of a better word, with Offaly have left the proud tradition of their hurling slip. It's very, very disappointing, and they need to reset and reboot. It's going to be very hard for Brian to pick up the lads. You know, there's going to be a couple of nasty teams in the qualifier group, and the last thing they'll want is probably to pull a Tipperary or someone that out of the hat, where, you know, you could be facing the same scenario in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, you wouldn't fancy it. Dermot, good to talk to you. We'll chat again soon.
Cheers, Damien.
Game over.